You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Bloodlines, or Firstborn, Part 2. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Chris from South Carolina.
Chris from South Carolina. Something tells me your voice is going to be very familiar to the listeners as we go on to this series.
Your fault, Lou.
It is my fault. Yeah, well, I'm just trying to keep you as a friend. Yeah. So, but hey, thanks for coming on, and I guess school is over. How'd the year go?
It was great. We got to stay in all year. It's always great when you get to stay in all year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's amazing.
Online schooling stuff.
Yeah, that's good. And you're not doing summer school this year, right?
I am doing a summer program, yeah.
Okay.
It starts not next week, but the week after.
Yeah, we at least got to give you a week or two off, huh?
Give me 1 week, and I got leadership stuff to do next week, but it's only a couple days.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Well, it's good to have you on, and you haven't heard this. Let's see. Let me look back here. Since Genesis, which probably was sometime late last year. I think it was the very last show, James, that I talked about. I was trying to get video of my bird nest, and I couldn't get the video to work. Do you remember that?
I'm going to say yes and hope you don't have a follow-up question.
Well, how many birds were in the nest? Okay, never mind. Okay, so there were 5 eggs. They had hatched. I couldn't get the camera inside the nest, but I got the camera to look at the nest. Wait. And I'm doing video today. Now, what you're looking at is the remnants of the nest. Okay. But that's essentially what I saw when I had the security camera turned around and made it nest cam. Okay, so unfortunately, a little while after we talked, the baby birds are doing just fine. It was so cute. You could see them raise up and then open their mouth, and the mother bird would drop stuff into their mouth, right? And it was absolutely so cute. Well, unfortunately, I have some bad video too. Another bird, I don't know, I'll call it the murderer bird. Another bird comes along, sees those birds there, grabs them one by one in the skull, starts shaking them, and drops them on the ground. And I'm just going to ask, what the fuck is that? I mean, why? Why would another bird, I don't know what kind of bird it was, I have it all on video, another bird comes along, just picks up a bird, shakes the hell out of it, and throws it on the ground. Is that supposed to be nature or what?
I mean, there's clearly competition for food and for resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's that. It's not going to be ideological, right? It's just a bird.
Yeah, it's a bird. But still, I didn't get it. I was like, I liked watching them feed the birds, and the I call it the daddy bird or whatever. You know, he would come along with the mouth full and drop it. And so they were both feeding these babies. It just didn't have a chance. That kind of sucks.
Birds are notoriously bad to each other.
I guess so. But then again, so are humans. So, you know, they're just learning by watching us, I guess.
No, no, they're awful. They're terrible. Awful. They don't have to watch us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sucks. And then I'm like, well, I guess they're not coming back. So I took the nest down. Next thing you know, they are back. I'm like, oh, crap. So I put the nest back up. And then the wind blew it down. And you can see, like, the father bird or whatever, he comes flying back in. He's got straw in his mouth. And he's like, where'd it go? I'm like, oh, crap. So I just kept it down. Let him build it again, right? All right. So anyway, thank you for coming on, Chris.
My pleasure.
All right.
I didn't realize that we were doing the bird hour.
Bird watch.
Yeah. I guess. Oh, well. You learn new things when you watch us. The synopsis for tonight's episode is Damon Bach threatens the life of a son Picard never knew he had. Maybe they should put spoiler alert in front of that. This is the 22nd episode of the Season 7 Next Generation. First aired May 2nd, 1994. Written by Nicholas Sagan. Directed by Les Landau. Guest stars. Ken Orland as Jason Vigo. Lee Ehrenberg as Bach. Peter Slutsker, S-L-U-T-S, Slutsker, as Berta. Co-starring Amy Peetz as Lieutenant Rhodes. Michelle Sisti as Tull. And, of course, the Machel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think of this episode coming off the heels of the last one?
He wants to go first.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. Watch the last one.
You're going to be last for a change, huh? Go ahead.
I don't like this. This isn't great, right? I didn't watch it back to back with Firstborn. So this is, you know, this is something that comes many weeks afterwards. But even so, why are these two episodes back-to-back? And more frustratingly, these episodes have titles that are interchangeable, right? Because Firstborn applies to this episode, Bloodlines applies to the other episodes as well. So I don't like that. I find it frustrating. But this is just... Does anyone need this? Does this add anything? Are there any redeeming features here? Was there anyone waiting as season 7 was counted down, thinking, could we please tie up the thread of the Damon Bach storyline? Was there anyone waiting, hoping that this would be resolved somehow? I mean, and when I say resolved, I think it was pretty much resolved in the battle. So it's a bit of a terrible one. I didn't realize it was Carl Sagan's son that did this. I mean, he's not got the greatest form at the moment, right? Because didn't he do Attached earlier on in the season as well? Yeah, so overall, not a huge fan here.
Okay. Me too. Me either. Or, yeah, me too, I guess. I don't remember much about the episode, to be honest. Although, it does seem like a rough draft for a future movie, doesn't it? Something similar, maybe. Here is the son that Picard never knew about. Maybe they'll redo it later and make it a clone. I don't know. But I do remember that this is lame. I hear... Pew, I don't know if I'm the only one hearing that. But here's a question. If you don't know this episode, and if I kill this episode by mentioning this question, well, watch it and then come back. Okay, so we know that this boy is not really Picard's son because Crusher does a DNA test, and yes, yep, he's yours, Jean-Luc. Nope, he's not yours, Jean-Luc. What would Picard have done if It wasn't his son. There's no way. He never knew his mother. He's practically a virgin. So there's no way that this could possibly happen. Do you think Picard would still have gone after this kid like this?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. Hang on, are we moving into the episode already, or shall we let Chris give his initial thoughts?
Oh, yes, Chris, please.
This is unconscionably bad. No one needed to think about Picard's sex life at this point in the series. They gave up on Beverly Crusher a while back, and, we're all sad about that, and this is the worst way to bring that back up. And then they do this stupid bait and switch storyline, and it's completely illogical. Why would he do any of this revenge scheme from Bach, or how would he even know about any of this? Like, it's all just weird and not it, it. Every bit of this episode took me out of this episode. So every new scene would take me out of the episode again. And it was just terrible, poorly written, bad characterizations. The only thing I can say is that the guy they got to play the son was a little bit charming. He had a Tom Cruise kind of vibe to him.
But we're expected to believe, right, that, okay, so Patrick Stewart or Captain Picard had a relationship with this woman, right?
One time for a week or something, right?
Well, like, so somehow the Ferengi need to know about it. They then take a punt on whether they had sex. They then take a punt on the fact that, Patrick Stewart's back in his 60s at this point, and he's not had any kids. So for all we know, he could be sterile, right? So they take a punt on him being able to have kids and to have had a child with this person, 35 years ago, or however long ago it would have been. And and had any of these things not been, not been possible, right? Like that he had a medical condition, so he couldn't impregnate people. It would have just been over straight away. It's like, I found your son. Oh, sorry, it's not possible. Moving on. Or it's with such and such. Went, oh no, we never had a relationship. Moving on. I mean, this entire episode relies on. I mean, but where did the daemon get all this technology from as well? It's like he's put across as being like the greatest supervillain, and the way they then wrap him up at the end is embarrassing. He's got all of he could get onto the ship. He's got all of this cutting edge tech, and then right at the end it's like, hey, these guys, he's not going to pay you. It's like, what? He's not going to pay us? And then everything collapses in the final seconds of this episode,
just like the last one.
Is that how the last one finished? I honestly can't even remember.
It was like 40 minutes of build-up and 3 minutes of, I'm your son! And he tells what happened, and then, you shouldn't have done that, Alexander. And then the ship flies away.
Oh, you mean that episode? So I thought you were talking about the battle from season one.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I meant that the last episode we reviewed. The battle from season one was just as bad.
No, the battle was better.
I liked the battle, actually. Yeah.
By the way, is this the same same actor for Bok, or is it a different guy?
I think it is the same guy, actually. He looked like him. I'm going to look him up.
Yeah, he looked like him. Yeah, they both had these big ears.
Right. Kind of fat and big ears.
I mean, considering that 90% of the look is going to be the prosthetics.
Yeah,
it's like the guy in the Vader suit. He looked similar, but I don't think he is the same guy. At least no, I don't think he is.
No, you're right. It is the different guy. He was played by Frank Corsentino back then, and this one is Lee Ehrenberg. So, boy, it. Not even close. What was I thinking? They don't even look close. I mean, they both got big ears. But besides that...
They do.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right, here we go. So, Frank Corsentino played Daemon Bok, Daemon Tog, and Gagus? Oh, Gagus. Okay, so anyway. Okay, so what if we found out that there is no way it wasn't his, that it was his son? And it's not, because many things that you described, James. I'll just keep it at that. But would he still have gone after him? He has credible knowledge that this guy believes he's his son, and he's going to kill him. So therefore, what do you think Picard, knowing I ain't got no son, what would he do?
He'll probably try to make him aware and, you know, save him. I'm sure he would. Mm-hmm. I mean, none of the Picard's actions throughout this episode come from... I should probably say that I don't particularly think they should have gone in this direction, and I don't particularly think it's anything that they could have set of interest for Picard. But he's not acting out of guilt for the mother, right? Mm-hmm. They make it very, very clear straight away, which is, oh, I was never told, and it sounds like something she would do. So straight away, any kind of dynamic of Picard trying to kind of, you know, resolve something from the past, we're not even told that they ended on bad terms, right? We're told in as clean as way possible that this happened, this might, you know, they had a relationship, she moved on, and he was kept in the dark potentially, and it would have been something that she would have done without actually, you know, without bad consequences falling onto her. So straight away, Picard is as clean as you can possibly get in any kind of relationship. So there's no kind of guilt. There's no him trying to, like, you know, come in and overplay his hand with the boy or anything like that. So you know, as far as I can tell, he's treating this guy as if he's anyone really. That I don't feel like there's anything really coming from the past that is really influencing him. Other than the fact that, you know, through one reason or another, this guy's now a threat. He's under threat, and Picard's kind of responsible, so he has to keep him on the Enterprise whilst he solves this week's puzzle. And that's really about it.
Okay. All right. So they run across a probe, and the probe is calling for Picard directly. And it seems to be a hologram of Damon Bach. He's back. Turns out he's gunning for a person named Jason Vigo, who has possibly been kidnapped. Nope, not kidnapped, because they find him on a planet, just kind of like climbing a rock. And he believes that he is Picard's son. So... how could a Starfleet captain not know about a son? Well, you discussed it already. She didn't tell him. Why? That really would suck if you find out 24 years later. You know, how would that conversation go? You know, well, hey, Miranda, how you been? Yeah, it's been about 24, 25 years. Yeah. Hey, I had a talk with a Ferengi who said he was going to kill my son. Do you know anything about it? And that would have probably... been an interesting conversation that do you think he should have had? He should have called Earth, talked to Miranda, or was she dead? She was dead, wasn't she?
Yes, yeah, she died. I mean, again, to make this episode kind of super clean and not have any moving parts in it, you kill her off in a heroic act off screen several years before. And it's not even that it's like, you know, you don't have her involved in this episode. It's in the past to the extent that now the son has moved on and isn't carrying any burden, right? So it's also artificially set up that you basically just wanted, you know, you wanted there to be a potential son. You didn't want to deal with any of the consequences of how, why, what, when, and who. And you might as well have just cloned the guy. I mean, yeah, I'm not a big fan here. Sorry, I'm moaning. I usually like Star Trek.
Oh no, come on! It pulls out a stinker once in a while. You know, every occasionally it would pull out a stinker. 24 years ago, Picard had a short-lived fling with a woman named Miranda Vigo. And now Riker walks in with his pad, and I absolutely loved Riker's face as he was handing in the pad. It's kind of like he's trying to picture him as a daddy of a boy from 24 years ago. But he hands him the pad, and they sit down and they discuss it. I love this conversation between Picard and Riker. What about you?
You're going to have to remind me. I don't have it as noteworthy in my head.
I know. I made these notes out 6 weeks ago. So it's like, that's why I'm thinking that, you know, why did he just sit down and call Miranda herself? Oh, wait. She's dead. But no, she just sits down how they met, and they weren't together for that very long. And I don't know. Okay, Chris, do you remember the conversation?
I mean, you essentially nailed it. That's pretty much it. He's saying, you know, he's warm to her and the feelings about her. But immediately you're taken out again, right? Like, you're like, okay, I could buy this. Like, Picard kid story, like, all that makes sense. But when his next line is not, maybe I should give her a call on the vid screen or whatever, it's, let's fly over to wherever the hell she is.
Mm-hmm.
Or find out, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you just get taken out of the whole thing. It's because it's insane thing built on top of an insane thing.
You're right. Why didn't he say, try and get her on the horn? Get her on the blower there, would you? Oh, I'm sorry, sir, she's dead. But that wouldn't have done, you know, enough good, because then he wouldn't have been shocked to find out from the kid himself. Yeah, I'm afraid Mama's dead.
But here's the thing. If you... who cares about that, first of all? But second of all, if they did do that, like, get her on the horn, oh, we can't, sir, we're sorry, she's dead, and nobody can locate the son. Like, nobody can locate the kid. He's supposed to be on this planet. Then you have a reason to go to the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that difficult. Well, we better get over there real fast before this kid gets killed. Okay. You know, instead it's like, nobody calls her. It's just, let's all head out there and see if we can find them.
Okay. Yep. That would be interesting.
And it's odd, right? Because they fly over to the planet, they kind of start scanning for all the humans that are there, which, I mean, does this, like, violate some kind of privacy laws? I'd hope so, at least. And then they beam him up because he's in danger, because he doesn't have the correct you know, rope or anti-grav unit on his harness. I mean, really? That's the threat that we're living under at the moment? He doesn't have the correct climbing equipment. So, yeah, that's what good drama is based on, right? Mm-hmm. Incorrect harness.
So let's see. The Enterprise is guilty of HIPAA violations, of kidnapping. What else? I mean, they didn't contact him, say, could we beam you aboard? No, they just took him away. Isn't that kidnapping? Oh, no.
They could have made it so he fell, right? They could have made it so he fell and they beamed him aboard as he was falling. I mean, I almost feel like what would have had to have changed? Like, nothing, right? Hmm. They wouldn't have needed it much.
No, but it would have, like you say, either way would have increased the drama effect of, no, I'm sorry, sir, we can't get a hold of her. And, yeah, her son has been reported missing for the last 2 days. And they're growing concerned. Well, like, this may be why. So I like that. And then they find him climbing a rock. And, oh, he's falling. Get him up, Mr. O'Brien. No, Mr. O'Brien's not there no more. Whoever the Mr. O'Brien's replacement is, get him up. And they catch him. They get him. He hits the bottom of the transporter pretty hard, but they got him. Instead, they caught him mid-climb. Okay. They got him mid-climb. He's not really interested in why he's on the ship. He would rather go back to the surface. And what does he do? He tries to go into the same pose he was when they beamed him up. Does he really think that would have worked? Do you think that the confinement beams can actually get him in the exact same position they took him?
Well, I'm willing to accept they can, but maybe I'm wrong. That's not the worst thing of the episode.
No, of course not. No, they beam him down, and he gets so messed up he falls, and they beam him back up and ask him, "Would you like to stay this time, or do you want to do that again?" But anyway, so we turn out the guy they beam up is actually Jason.
And they do the thing about are you Jason Vigo? And he goes, I know him. And you know straight away that this is just nonsense, right? Yeah. There's no way that it's not the guy and all of that stuff.
Yes. We have a warrant for your arrest. No, we don't. Okay. So, it may be him. But here's another thing I'm probably not going to ask. Yeah, I don't see it on here, so I'm going to ask it now so I can remember it. He has a criminal record. He's a thief. He's a petty thief. What do you think he was climbing for? Did they really explain that?
He liked to climb, right?
He was climbing.
No, but it was the love of the climb, I thought. And I thought that most of his criminal record, quote-unquote, was to do with trespassing onto private property for the purpose of climbing. I think they make a way too big a deal out of his criminal record, as far as I can tell. It's not as if they killed a guy or anything like that.
No. So they don't really say he's a thief. He keeps going into places he shouldn't be to climb. Okay. Well, it turns out it is him, and so Picard begins to tell him the story until he's informed that the woman died a few years back. And you know what I thought? I don't want to go back to sixth grade again. But the point is, Picard seemed to handle that news very easily. Maybe it's because he only knew her for a few weeks or something, and it was that simple, and they were gone. But it just seemed like he was handling the death of the news of her death just a little bit easy. And just, you know, go on. Okay, well, this is why we're here, and we need to get a test. And he doesn't even sit down for a second and say, gee, she really was a good person, and, you know, grief for her. I didn't see that whatsoever.
There's no relationship.
But there was.
There really isn't. There's no real relationship between Picard and this woman. She is there as a, you know, they needed a character to have squeezed the baby out of 20 odd years ago, so that the baby could have grown up to be the character that's in this episode. There's nothing about the relationship between the mum and the dad and Picard. And not only is there no relationship in the past in terms of, you know, him feeling sorry about leaving or him having questions about anything, it's also the case that, yeah, he doesn't particularly care that she's no longer around. There's just a disconnect. There's no interest from the writers to explore that.
So one night stand kind of thing, like Picard got a little drunk on some tea Earl Grey hot. And ended up back at Miranda's apartment.
Yeah, but the more you make, okay, the reaction of Picard in this episode, and also the way that they kind of set up the relationship makes it so insignificant, right? Because you don't want to have any question about, you know, why did Picard leave, or, you know, or all of the stuff about the messiness behind the relationship. You make that relationship so mild and so small that you almost think, well, what was it? Was it really just a one-night stand? At which point, how the hell did the Ferengi find out about it?
Yeah.
So you've kind of got this flip side. It has to be significant enough for alien race to be able to track people down 20 years hence, right? You have to have made such a mark, but also it has to be so insignificant that you're not even going to mention any of these obvious things that come up in the episode. And that doesn't work for me. It just, you know, you can have one, but not the other. You can't have both at the same time.
Okay.
And honestly, like, writerly wise, it shows their hands. Like, you can almost see the board where they've written this up there, where they're like, all right, we need this kid, and we need him to be this old and this particular thing, so what can we do to get there? Well, they could have had a one-night stand. Okay, well, a one-night stand doesn't work, because then how does the Ferengi know about the one-night stand? Like, that seems a little odd. And the thing that they chose to go with was, well, maybe it was a one-week stand, and then they called each other occasionally. But she never mentioned the kid, right? Like, just, it's odd. And he never noticed anything in the vid call. He didn't notice a glow. He didn't notice her, you know, getting a little bigger. None of that. Like,
and what did she leave? I mean, I understand that they were both on the Stargazer, and the Stargazer kind of, you know, it blew up, kind of thing. But did they not keep in touch? I mean, when would this have happened? They were on the Stargazer together, right? We know that, even from the battle. Although at the time, I don't think it was accepted that it was not known that it was a female colleague. That was the Vigo character. But if this happens while they're on the Stargazer, and what, it, they go their separate ways and they don't see each other within what? Yeah, how long does it take before a woman's showing, right? 12, 16 weeks? Something like that? It's, you know, it's not... The time in here is incredible, right? And by which I do mean lacks credibility. It is literally incredible that you couldn't have had this happen.
Well, I thought he did say it was, they were only together a few weeks. Plus, when was he on the Stargazer? If we're on the eighth year that he's on the Enterprise and the kid is 24 years old, we have to figure it happened about 25 years ago. Was he on the Stargazer for a good 12 or more years?
No, I never read the book.
What?
There is one.
But there's a ship between the Stargazer and the Enterprise, right? Or am I?
Well, the Stargazer was his first ship that he commanded as captain. So right. We don't know what the last one was. So you're right, it could have been the Stargazer from way back when.
Okay, hang on a second. You have to click here. Okay. 2333, Picard assumes command of the Stargazer. Yeah, no, it's then like 15 years later when he picks up the Enterprise. No, more than that, 30 years later. What? So apparently he gets the Enterprise in 2363, but he's on the Stargazer in 2333. So 30 years.
So the Stargazer may have been his last ship.
Hang on, no, Picard, no, sorry, I'm mistaken. I am mistaken, because Picard remained in command of the Stargazer for 22 years. What? That doesn't make any sense.
33 and 22, 55. Was he just out of commission for 5-6 years?
I honestly thought that they had... Okay, I was under the impression that this Vigo, was on the Stargazer when the Stargazer was lost, because the name is mentioned in the battle, but she couldn't have been.
Mm-mm.
And for that to have been 23 years ago, because it was only like 8 years before the Enterprise. He took control, took command of the Enterprise. Anyway, don't look at timelines, because we're not given an official timeline, right? We're always given snippets here and there.
Yeah.
And whenever you write it down, these snippets don't form a continuous and well thought through timeline.
Which is fine. Like, we don't need it to.
No,
we're watching the episode. That doesn't necessarily take us out, because I don't think any of us watch it with the time map, you know, up. And like, none of us. I don't know many people that are that much of a wonk for Star Trek that they do that, right? But it does take us out that it doesn't even make sense on a surface level within this very story, right? Like, that they would have any kind of real relationship, or that the Ferengi would even be able to find out about it. Like, all of it just out the window, senseless. I don't know what.
Okay. Apparently, I've just looked it on Memory Alpha under Miranda Vigo. It says that they may have intended Miranda to be the former member of Picard's crew aboard the Stargazer, since the weapons officer aboard that ship was named Vigo. However, as the story was developed, the Stargazer connection was dropped. So I'm assuming here, because it's Vigo, I'm thinking right back to the battle, but apparently it's not. Apparently I'm wrong. It was not from the battle.
But he does say Vigo, doesn't he?
He does, but it's not that character. It can't have been that character. Maybe it's one of her other kids that she had. Well,
are we going to get into the Picard is Wesley Crusher's daddy thing too?
You know something? I was thinking about that. What if Dr. Pulaski had been going through the medical records and said, I found something interesting. The DNA that Wesley Crusher has is very similar to yours, Captain. Just pop that out and say, no, it's not. Drop it. Let it go. Yes, sir.
Season 8.
Season 8.
If she comes back, that's what.
Yes, yes. Or she, you know, files a lawsuit against the Federation and wants to let air out some of their dirty secrets, like Captain Picard is Wesley's father. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. Man. Go ahead. You got more on that?
No. So speaking of season 8, got me to think about the new Picard series, and I'm just sad that I'll never watch Star Trek ever again. Any of this new crap they're putting out. But anyway,
whoa. How far did you get with Picard season 2?
So I haven't watched it yet. But when they said that someone online, one of the online pundits that I was checking into before I paid for Paramount Plus, said that they used January 6th as the reason for Khan being created, and it was like a white supremacist thing all attached to the January 6th insurrection in America, which is laughable.
No, they didn't. I mean,
they didn't at all.
Unless that went completely over my head, they didn't do that.
They didn't. So they didn't bring up the January 6th thing at all.
Not explicitly. Not as far as I can tell. So what ends up happening is that they, you know, Q pushes people into an alternative universe, of which like one thing has changed, which kind of ripples down, and now the Federation is like a fascist regime. So effectively, it's like mirror, right? And then they kind of trace back what that step was, and it's a little. I mean, I don't think they really reference. I mean, the main kind of trigger event is supposed to be this ancestor of Picard that either goes on or doesn't go on a space mission, which changes. And the implication is that it's some type of technological change that allows people to solve some environmental problems. So if she goes on the mission, they can solve the environmental problems using this thing that she discovers. If they don't, you end up having to go in the you have to go for Dr. Soong's technology route that puts you down kind of like a dark path. That's how I read the entire thing. Maybe I'm completely wrong here.
Yeah, I don't remember anything like that. I'm gonna have to. My problem is it's hard for me to do a review of a series like Picard unless I've watched it a few times. You know, it's hard for me to do a review of a story that just came out last night. Now, a lot of people could do that. That's how some podcasts are done. I just don't like that because I don't think I absorb enough to really give that kind of review. Whereas TNG is 30 years old. I've seen it so many times. I can do the dialogue with the people.
Now, I have to say, one of the things I enjoyed about season 2 of Picard is, this is supposed to be legitimate praise. It's not like, you know, it's not faint praise here. When they started Picard, there was this big thing that, and we were led to believe there was Patrick Stewart that said it's not going to be TNG, and it's almost as if what he was saying is that it's not going to be in BTNG. I'm not going to share my wage with those guys. It almost felt like it was that. But what season three of Picard sounds like, it sounds like it's TNG in the sense that they set up a set of like original characters in Picard season one. I mean, I think only one of them survives, so that the rest of them are gone. So the Agnes isn't there, and Rios isn't there, and all of these characters that were set up that we were supposed to care about, which were, in my mind, they never really worked as characters. I wasn't particularly invested in any of them, but they all get effectively kind of, you know, their storyline, you know, terminated by the end of season two. So you kind of head into season three really with the only people in play being being Picard, which is a TNG character, Seven of Nine, which is a Voyager character, and the what's her name, the Raffi, who was Picard's kind of, you know, other number one from the show, who I think is an extraordinarily weak character, I have to say. And now we know that all of the main crew are coming back from TNG, so it feels like it's going to be a TNG series. Now, just so there's no misunderstanding here, I have no faith that it's going to be any good, because so far I've not watched anything. I've not watched anything in the last decade of Trek that makes me think that the writers are able to produce Trek. And I'm not currently, I'm trying not to complain too much, but yeah, I don't think they quite get it. And I have to say, maybe it's also the times have changed, right? I don't think Trek works as a continual story arc. And I will fight anyone that tells me, well, DS9 was a continual story arc. DS9 wasn't a continual story arc. It was episodic TV.
Things that strung together. Like there were small pieces and bits that, you know, it would be good to know about, but you could watch without knowing those things and still grasp.
I mean, Voyager was technically a story arc in that they left and they had to come back. It doesn't mean that episode to episode it rolled into each other, which is what Trek has been for the last like 6 or 7 or so years.
Yeah. Well, just like Jumping the Shark, I think Voyager came up with a new meme called the reset button.
Oh, does this episode have a reset button in it, though?
Yeah, well, of course. A lot of them do. as far as Picard...
Did you watch it, Lou?
Yes, I did. I did get to the end, finally. And I'm going to say, guys, I will spoil alert this one, because if you don't know how this ends, I strongly suggest you stop and go watch it. Even if you only watch the last two episodes, I thought they were pretty good. However, you've been warned.
Sorry, how does it end? I have no recollection of it ending in any kind of notable way. So
you don't know? Have you watched it?
No, I know, but I thought that it was, I thought it was telegraphed like 8 episodes in as to how it was going to end.
You haven't watched the end of it?
No, I have.
You have? Okay.
I thought that the ending was, it was very clear how it was going to end.
Okay.
Way in advance.
The only thing I take exception to, as much as Q was a pest, the idea of Q dying, it just bothers me for some reason. Why would Q how could a Q die? It sounds like he's dying of natural causes, which is impossible.
Well, we had the Q trying to commit suicide, so like that's... Yeah.
But I mean, he was made human so he could do that.
Right.
But I don't understand how a Q dies. And why, if he's dying, does he want to play this game with Picard? Just one last act of craziness before I die. So, really, no matter... Do you think, knowing Q, no matter how the season would have progressed, we all would have been saved anyway?
Okay, just 1 second. It's not clear to me that Q dies.
He said, well, that's true. He says he is. It's just one last snap of the finger and he's All the power he had left. His batteries are drained.
Yeah, but considering that we're talking about a show, right, that put a Borg queen into a big molten thing of sulfuric acid and turned her into, like, she turned into that, the spinal cord, and they snapped it, and then she's back like 3 or 4 or 5 times, whenever you need her. It's not clear to me that there's an unambiguous death of Q.
No funeral, no body, no autopsy. So,
even if you do have a body, right? It's what does it mean for Q to die? I mean, Q can be back immediately. Actually, I'm going to have to step out. I think I have mentioned this before. Step out of the negativity. The CG of Q de-aging, that was awesome. The de-aged Q. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that when he first appeared? That was really good, and it was exactly what I think that's exactly what the fandom would have expected and would have wanted. That's how you handle it. Q is not anymore. He's not wanted. He's not in his 50s or however old he would have been in TNG. So this is a reality you have to live with. The way that you handled it as they did in this episode. When Q snapped his fingers and he goes from young Q to old Q. What you don't do, you don't recast Guinan.
Yeah,
that
I
was
know.
Horrendous.
That is true.
There was no need. There's no reason to have Guinan in the entire storyline.
No, it wasn't.
So if you're not going to get the actress to do it, and if she wants to do it, fine. If she doesn't, fine. I mean, I was under the impression they were going to have like a cameo.
Yeah.
Nothing
they did, though. Eventually.
Oh no! Whoopi Goldberg turns up.
Yeah.
But there's no benefit of having the guy and character in the past.
No, even if there was, even if it's just to bring Whoopi into the episode, there was no need to do a younger version of her because it just completely invalidates Sam Clemens and the whole 1800 Earth where, Guinan was sent to listen. Well, she looked like she did somewhat now. They probably could have CGI de-aged her. But I see no need to bring in a whole new body when she never looked like that from the 1800s when she first arrived all the way up to the 2240s. When Picard sees her. So you're right. There's no need for that other actress.
Okay, I hope we're not making this... we're obviously making this show irresistible for Chris to watch now. The other thing that I don't...
I'm not going to watch it. The fact that it's a fascist state out of the gate and the fact that we're dealing with things... So everything that I've heard and read about it is that it's not even-handed. It's not thoughtful. Star Trek should be a thing that makes us think about big issues. So I'm not opposed to them using things like fascism, right? But we got to look at it truly and in a real way. We're coming out of a time where we've had authoritarian pushing down on us and basically being fascist. And then they're going to, like, the way that they present this is that fascism only happens in this one way. And I know that maybe it gets better and they kind of let off the gas on that a little bit in the end, but I'm not with it, man. Star Trek is something that is thoughtful and philosophical and deep. And everything I've read about this doesn't seem like it is that stuff. It seems like it is kind of playing a party line. And that's, I think it's problematic. I think we shouldn't be coming from right or left. We should be coming from the center and looking at both sides and really asking deep questions using these characters.
I disagree slightly with that.
Okay.
I think that there's sometimes a little bit too much of a pushback when Star Trek gets political, where people say, well, Star Trek shouldn't be political, whereas...
No, it should.
When you look at the first season of TOS, right, there are hugely political episodes in it. A Taste of Armageddon is one of my favorite episodes in the first season. It's an anti-draft episode, but it is what it is. Now, you might not realize that that's what it is, but that's because you're not currently living with the threat of a draft. But it's an anti-draft episode written at the time where Americans were being drafted into a war in Korea. It's so you have to be aware of, you know, of that you haven't had kind of like a perfect, like, you know, you certainly have not had a perfect kind of like, you know, 100% neutral take from Trek throughout history. And I don't particularly want there to be. And sometimes when there's a bit of a pushback about that, I think we're pushing back on the wrong thing. What we should be pushing back on is that I don't think the writers are good enough at being able to make these points. Not even right. The points they're trying to make. It's that they're just not good enough.
So it's overly didactic. And that's what I'm trying to say. And maybe I miss. Words fail sometimes. But my point is that everything I've heard about this sounds like it is overly preachy. And it's, I think it's Alexander Pope that has the quote of, like, don't ever tell a man what he can do when you can tell him a story that'll help him see what he can do. You know, so, like, it just feels like they've kind of veered into that lane a little bit too much. Now, I thought the first season didn't do that, and I actually kind of liked it. You know, like, it's interesting. It got a little weird in the end, and the writers aren't that strong. I mean, you're 100% correct on that. But but it wasn't terrible. You know, and then I was really looking forward to season two, and everything about it was like, oh, it's this didactic, preachy thing about how fascism comes from being anti-immigration and anti-this. And it's like, oh, so this is just like a mirror of what I'm looking at in the world. Like, tell me a story that helps people see, including myself, like the pains of this thing or the, I don't know.
No, I hear what you're saying. I don't think it is as preachy as maybe it's kind of like its worst critics suggest.
Right.
But just to be clear, it's not good Trek, and it's not it is not sophisticated in its storytelling. The other big problem that I have with current Trek, and I was actually talking to my kids earlier today about it, which, you know, because they were asking me, one of them found that, oh, I understand that, like, all even Star Trek films are good and all odd Star Trek films are bad. Is that true, Dad? And I went, well, you know, let's have a discussion about this. So I told him what all the episodes were about. And it basically comes down to, you know, Star Trek didn't used to be about... I shouldn't say it didn't used to be. It wasn't solely about galaxy-destroying threats. Right, that wasn't what it was solely about. Now, right. there are certainly instances where you would put up a threat in order to, you know, enhance the drama, and you would also put up the threat that would potentially, you know, you would raise the stakes for the purpose of the storytelling. What we've fallen into with Trek, and I think it's the first three seasons of Discovery, right? Where in the first season it's the Federation at stake, in the second season it's the entirety of the galaxy at stake, and in the fourth season it's all timelines that can ever exist are at threat. And you know, where do you go from there? What headroom do you have left? And I didn't like the idea of kind of, you know, the synthetics in season one of Picard being able to, you know, wipe out all organic life in the universe. Mm. I mean, when people use the term universe, people don't quite realize how big the universe is, right? And there's significant parts of the universe that are inaccessible from us from a general theory of relativity perspective. But no doubt, these robots will kill everyone. I don't think we don't need to keep going big. We don't have to keep going bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I would have. Given that Picard was set on Earth, given that it involves an 80-odd-year-old as a main protagonist, I would have liked them to hold back a little. And the other thing I have to criticize here, whilst we're on Picard, and it is something that I criticize Star Wars a lot, which is that when you make all of the stories in the entire timeline revolve around a very small number of people, it doesn't expand the universe. It actually shrinks it. I have no interest in Picard's ancestor being pivotal in history. I have no interest in Picard's cleaner or housekeeper being an ancestor of someone pivotal in history. I have no interest in seeing another Dr. Soong being pivotal in history. I don't need that anymore. I love Brent Spiner. Great guy. Want to see, you know, it was very obvious that you would have Brent Spiner play the creator of Data. It was obvious that a robot would have an evil clone. But beyond that, we're done. Right. We're done. Now, when someone says, hey, wouldn't it be great to get Brent Spiner in Enterprise? And you go, oh, okay then. Yeah, okay. That was like, clearly we weren't strong enough at Enterprise and told him, no, go home, we're done. But now we have every android under the sun, the entire extended family going back generations, being these evil, you know, evil kind of master criminals that you don't quite know where that come in from. You don't need, you know, we don't need the Soji character to have been a reincarnation of someone from 300 years or 400 years previous. We don't need this. It's shrinking the universe. We don't need the Borg Queen revelation at the end of Picard either. It shrinks the universe. It doesn't make it a large tapestry for storytelling, and that's a big frustration I have with. It goes back to Michael Burnham as well, right? Oh, it's Spock's sister. No, it's not. No, it's not. It doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be Sarek. It's not necessary.
I don't like Worf's really brother either.
Sorry, bit of a rant there.
Well, I said I don't like Worf's brother either. He's too much of a the guy who plays him plays way too many mafia guys.
Right,
but
I think that's necessary, Doc, because this episode is it's trite. It's not very good. It doesn't cause us to think either, right? And sometimes that's fine. Like, some of my favorite episodes are like Worf get stuck in a Western on the holodeck, and like that's great, right, for a time. But I don't know, we're seventh season, we're towards the end, like I want something beautiful and good, and then they give us two episodes in a row that are like, here's the promise of considering, you know, lineage and legacy and what good it is to be a parent or whatever, and then we get these episodes, which admittedly I didn't watch the last one before I came into this, but I've seen it, and I don't remember being anything knock home.
Real quick before we slide back from our tangent, that shot you looked at, you said it's a beautiful shot.
It is.
That is in the last episode, just before Q supposedly dies. Picard actually walks up to him and gives him a hug.
Well, I'm waiting to...
That's something you gotta see then.
I'm waiting to hear if Strange New Worlds goes the same path as...
Oh, okay. By the way, I'm hearing good things about Strange New Worlds. So all
if
of my...
Great, then I might jump in and I'll watch season two. Like,
There's a Noonien Singh!
I am a Star Trek fan.
There's a Noonien Singh on the Enterprise.
In Strange New Worlds?
Yes! Yeah. What? Okay. No! No!
Hang on. Just be clear. Okay, I haven't watched any Strange New Worlds. In their wisdom, they've decided not to release it in the UK, so I can't even watch it. Which is what they did with Discovery Season 4, which is why I haven't seen Discovery Season 4 yet. And that, now it might be for the best, but Trek is currently being kept away from UK. I think Paramount Plus launches in a couple of months or so maybe it will be part of that deal.
No, it's on.
What do you mean?
Watching
No. No, I mean in the UK. We don't get Paramount Plus in the UK.
Oh, yeah, right.
Now, okay, I did know about the Noonien Singh character. The question I have, or the name, the question I have is that am I being overly optimistic to assume that it's just a coincidence on the name and it's no relation?
Oh, no. It's very well discussed. It's discussed. That's what I'm saying. They keep pulling these people out of thin air, and they discuss it as if now she's on this ship and she's a Noonien Singh, and people know about her. I don't know, daddy, granddaddy, something.
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's like turning. I mean, like your president at the moment turning around and like the Labour secretary being like Steve Hitler, right?
It's yes.
Like, I mean, realistically, is that going to happen?
No. No, they would that would have been taken out before. They never would have been on the administration. No, we can't hire Steven Hitler. It's not going to happen. Yeah.
I mean,
no,
there are probably relatives that weren't that have got a bit of a stained surname there. Okay, that's unfortunate. Because, again, the thing I like about Trek is that... Okay, there was... In the TOS episodes, they clearly state that the 20th, 21st century is a bit of a dark time for humanity. There is, like, a big, like, fog, like, or like a fog of war over that time period. I think that that allows them to... it allows them to tell stories, right, without being nailed down. It allowed them to bring up the Khan character and for people to be surprised by it and for people to be, you know, for there not to have, like, a large light on every single aspect of history. And again, I think that when you nail things down too heavily, you don't expand the universe. You shrink it. And
yes, but there's a big but there. There's a huge but there. This was when the Enterprise was captained by Pike. So no one even knew who Khan was at the time.
I don't know what Strange New World is telling you, but chronologically we're being told that they must have, right? Whereas in the original series episodes, there's always this sense that you could discover something new. It kind of feels, and Enterprise was slightly guilty of this, right? That if you kind of lay the path out very clearly for them, it kind of takes away the unknown that they were headed into, you know, because everything's already been mapped. Everything's already been, everyone has already kind of laid out the entirety of history. So it's, anyway. By the way, I'm not a big fan of Uhura being in it either, for the same reason. It's not necessary, right? Again, it's not necessary.
It's not a bad series. I surely like the guy who plays Captain Pike. I do like where some of the places are going with it. I like him. You're right. You see Uhura, you see Lieutenant Spock. Where I get confused is when he calls for number one, it's like two different women are number one at any given time. So I think I need to kind of rewatch and get a better perspective on who the real number one is there. Because one of them is Noonien Singh.
Mm. So. Okay, I was not aware. I thought that the only number one was actually number one.
Right. But I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and redo it. But I just wanted to alert you there is a Noonien Singh. Do you have Paramount Plus UK?
No, that is not a thing. That's not a thing that exists.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sure it will exist soon.
Nothing has shown how ridiculous media companies are more than internet streaming services. Because there are streaming services where things will be available in one location and they could easily be available in a whole other location in the same way, and they're just not. And I know that it's like contracts and all that stuff, but they're going to have to figure that out because it's really frustrating the more we get to a kind of global, everybody's connected.
I'll tell you something. I could get him online before the end of the night.
VPN.
If you know how to VPN, but you can't get an account to Paramount Plus over there, so then I'd have to get you on the account and get you a login. So you get a VPN, Doc. I'll hook you up. Don't worry about it.
I'm being told that it launches on the 22nd of June, apparently, and it's going to cost me £6.99 a month.
Yep, that's about the same. Mm-hmm. Over here.
That's about like $8 or so.
Yeah, I think it is $8.99 or something. I don't remember. But okay, so anyway, Jason Vigo. Would you believe he's only just beamed aboard?
Oh, crikey, we are further along than that, aren't we?
Definitely.
Well, can be.
We
right?
can
Nothing
be.
Nothing really happens.
Nothing happens. He's in a cave. They beam him up. Hey, I might be your daddy. Let's go find out. They take a genetic test. Informal poll here. Will Dr. Crusher get it right? Well, she thinks she did. Yes, you are the father of this boy over here. And if, just like a Maury Povich moment, Picard throws the test results down, runs off stage, and says, you know, yeah, he was set up. Well, who's your daddy?
Your mama was a hoe.
Your mama was a hoe. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yes. Yeah, so Maury Povich, what a useless waste of TV time. It was always the same thing. Shaquan, you are the father. Everybody running off stage. Good Lord. That was just so stupid. Now we go to Picard's quarters. I have to wonder. They did say that he did have a criminal record, which was petty thefts. Let me find it. I lost it. Petty thefts, trespassing, and one other. No big deal. He's not going to do any jail time for stuff. So,
which you kind of picked up on. The acting was really good by the... I think the actor that played the son was not bad. Like, he was okay. He was charming. He had a, you know, he had some charisma. And he really, like, he played the scene well where he was looking at the artifact. Like, you could already tell this guy's got, he's got a darker edge. He's got a, you know, something to him. He's not exactly perfect, right? So they, you know, for what it's worth, that was not the worst part of the episode, was his acting choices and that choice of actor.
No, but when he was holding that thing, I thought he might be thinking about coming back and getting that later.
Right.
That's kind of what I thought. So I thought, maybe he'll be like Professor Rasmussen and walk around gathering artifacts. So,
Can you believe that the guy that plays Picard's son is now 64 years old?
Sure.
I mean, this is...
I watched these when I was like... early 20s.
Yeah, but
not anymore.
Yeah, but still, right? It's like when you watch the TOS episodes and a good part of the crew are now dead. 64 doesn't. I was not expecting it to be 64, maybe 50 or so. But it's been a long time. Because I was thinking, you know, when you're mentioning how good he was, I thought, oh, I wonder whether he went on to have like a proper career, like a significant run. There's not a huge amount there. There's, you know, bits and pieces throughout the years, a couple of shows a year kind of thing. But 64 years old now.
Yeah.
Was he ever on In the Heat of the Night or one of those police procedural shows?
Okay, when you say all one of those, I mean, I have no idea. But
Law and Order. Like, he looks like the type of guy that would be on Law and Order, one of the 50 incarnations of it.
I don't think In the Heat of the Night made it over to the UK.
Right.
No,
he was on 21 Jump Street and Murder, She Wrote, and JAG, which I assume is some type of thing. More recently, Battle Creek. What's that?
I don't know. Never heard of that.
See Dad Run House. Is that the okay? That's the Hugh Laurie thing. Hugh Laurie, right? he's a comedian in the UK. He was well known to be a comedian as part of the double act for decades, and then he goes over to America for a little bit, and he lands like House, which I think has been going for like 10 years or whatever it was. He is not well known in the UK for House. In fact, I doubt people in the UK have seen House. They know Hugh Laurie from other stuff with Stephen Fry.
Crazy. House is like a cultural touch point here.
Yeah.
You know what Stephen Fry is known for here?
Oh, go on.
Being the better Harry Potter narrator.
Oh, really? Okay. I am aware that he is a Harry Potter narrator. But in the UK, so he's become somewhat of a, like, an elder English gentleman on a lot of TV shows and stuff like that. He's when you need someone that sounds like that clever, you generally go to Stephen Fry.
Yeah, well, he also has recently put out a bunch of books. So in my sphere, He's been doing some mythology series where he kind of writes his own versions of the Greek myths and some of the different things around that. And they're really fantastic. He's a very... I like Stephen Fry a lot.
Okay. All right. So
we could talk about anything else besides this episode.
Yeah. Well, you know. Oh boy.
I'm just looking at. So, Chris, did Blackadder ever get it over to the US? Have you heard of Blackadder?
I've never heard of it.
Mm-mm. Black what?
Okay. It's the comedy show that like Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry were known for. They had their own kind of sketch show, but the series that they're probably most associated with is Blackadder. And I'm just going through the Wikipedia thinking, oh yeah, that's a very, very English thing. And I doubt it ever touched the US.
Yeah, no, that's pretty weird.
I'll say that today was the first time that I ever had any inclination that Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry were in any way connected, Doc.
Really? That
helped. Yeah.
Wow.
No clue.
Blackadder. Blackadder. Hackers.
No, Adder.
Like a snake.
Oh, Hadder.
Yeah, that's also got Rowan Atkinson in it, who's, you know, do you guys get Mr. Bean?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, okay. It's him.
Now I want to watch it, just since you mentioned Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, just, I mean, get a couple, you know, 10 minutes worth of clips or so on YouTube. It'll give you a pretty good idea of what it's like. There's very little, I mean, you can get a sense of it from just the TV show, from a clip.
I'll tell you, have either of you seen Rowan Atkinson's stand-up routine?
By the way, I've run into Rowan Atkinson in the street.
No
when
shit.
I was a student, I imagine I was around where he lived.
You talked to
her. Oh, actually, I was with the wife at the time, and hey, look, it's Rowan Atkinson, and she went where and looked the other way. It's like,
oh, yeah.
That didn't work, did it?
No, look for Bean. He's right there. Okay, so anyway, where was we? So that the genetic test turns out, you know, it is true. Bach was in prison and was able to buy his way out.
That's a nice touch. That's a nice touch, right?
I like to know how that's possible.
Did they happen to do a lot of a lot of work at this time of TNG to convert the Ferengi into what they were, which were, you know, the daemons and the threat into what they are now going to be famous for? Which is the rules of acquisition and stuff like that. So there's a mention of the rules of acquisition. There's a mention of, he bought his way out of prison, all of that stuff. And look, it's not the smoothest transmission change that's ever going to be. But I think they at least acknowledge, right, that that this is how we used to think of the Ferengi, and this is how we think of the Ferengi now, at least from a production perspective, and they do mention it. So I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I liked it. I figured that this episode only got made because Deep Space Nine was on, right? Like, they're like, how can we bring Ferengi back to TNG, right? Like, we've had them occasionally, but how can we bring them back now that Deep Space Nine has, like, really made this cool again?
More practically, right, I would imagine that there's just, I don't know if there's more Ferengi prosthetics available or there's like more familiarity with Ferengi prosthetics, but I would imagine that at the height of DS9, you know, they probably had it pretty easy, pretty down to turn a Ferengi around, I would have thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Picard needs to talk to a parent, you know? He's just not connecting with this boy. So he seeks out the only parent he can think of. Beverly Crusher.
This is after Journey's End, right? Mm-hmm. Who we have, what, now labeled as clearly the worst parent in the world? Like, yeah, I had a son once. He's now on a new plane of existence. But I'm going to come to you for parental advice.
Yeah,
but also the parent of what, right? Like,
of what?
Of what might be his child.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mm. It's possible. Yeah. So, yeah, that. Okay. Let's just skip that. How about Jason or Deanna Troi visiting Jason to see how he is, if there's any way she can help? And he immediately hits on her. Not bad.
Yeah, I felt like this was unnecessary. I know they were trying to go for this kid is kind of a rogue, you know, but they had already made him a thief and a, you know, a kid who was like breaking into places and like being in the wrong spaces where he wasn't supposed to be. Like, they were making him like an adventurous kind of rogue, and then they turned him into a sexual deviant as well. It was just weird. I don't know what the point of this scene is at all.
That's what I was going to say. You know, to what end, right? Look, I don't care if he is a sexual deviant, but what does that say about either the character? What does that give you in terms of an insight into Picard's, you know, storyline? Because it's all down to Picard, right? This guy's not going to be here next week. So really what we're looking for is, what can this tell us about Picard? And I don't get it. I don't get what in a way, right? Because Picard doesn't change. He doesn't behave differently on the back of the criminal record, or on the back of him enjoying rock climbing, or on the back of him wanting to hit on Troi. This doesn't affect anything. So what's the point?
Well, I think Picard, we made early on that Picard kind of was like Jason in a way when he was younger, the guy that would hit on the fellow ensign or go out for a wild night with playing Damjot or getting into fights with Nausicaans. And
well, I think if okay, in order for us to get to there, I think we have to be doing all of the work, because I don't think that the writers are doing any of the work for us. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's setting up parallels. I don't think they are making this, you know, there's no kind of confrontation between father and son as to what the correct way of dealing with it. There's no narrative about that you have to now take responsibility. You did that. Nothing like that. And I'm not suggesting that that's a good thing for them to want to lean into, but there's none of that, and as a result there's no kind of real tension between the characters. And then on top of everything else, you press the reset button at the end and it's like, oh, well, oops, I was wrong, you're not his son. So it's like, oh, okay, well then what's the point? There's a part of me, by the way, I mean, maybe this isn't the right place to talk about it, but perhaps we should anyway. Why didn't they just make this Picard's son? The only thing I can imagine is that they were going to. They saw how bad this character was, or this story was being told, and they thought, actually, no, we're not prepared to sacrifice a change in the character. So why?
Well,
what would have been bad about Picard finding out that he had a son?
Well, my question is slightly different than that. I don't know that I have an answer to your question, Doc, but my question is, why didn't they make him a party to the whole thing? Like, the supposed kid, a party to the whole thing. Like,
actually,
this way of getting to the ship.
I thought that he was. There was a part, because I haven't seen this in so long, I thought, oh, actually, he's in on it, isn't he? That's what I was
saying. Right. They make him completely not in on it.
I convinced myself that he was in on it, and I was just waiting for the reveal. Because he has the shakes at a certain point, and he's aware of the shakes. And he, you know, he doesn't go ask for help. It's more like, oh, you know, maybe he's aware that his camouflage or his, you know, his resequencing is not quite working, and he's keeping that secret. So you do think there's something wrong with him, and maybe he's in on it. And I had written a completely different story in my mind, and I was surprised to find that actually he wasn't in on it after all.
But it would make so much more of the story make sense, like him hitting on Troi here. Like, that makes sense if he's like a dude who's been living with the Ferengis or whatever. It makes so much of the backstory of like he's on this planet and they're calling it. So like all the setup pieces, then there's no question about how would he know all this stuff? Well, because he manufactured all of it with this kid. He and this kid worked it out together. And what were they doing it for? I don't know, to extort something out of Picard. Like there's so many better ways you could have told this story.
Yeah.
Than the way that they chose to tell this story.
And when you look at the way that Bok is behaving, right? He turns up at the beginning of the episode and goes, "Ooh, I'm going to kill your son." And then Picard goes, "Whoa," runs around. And then he goes, "Ooh, I'm going to come and kill your son." And he keeps on threatening things, right? Had he turned up and gone, "Oh, by the way, I killed your son. I killed him 2 weeks ago. Look, you didn't, maybe you didn't know him, or maybe you did, but hey, he's now dead." But he keeps saying that he's going to kill his son, even down to the fact that he turns on the view screen after abducting him and says, "I just want you to know that I'm going to kill your son so you can see him for the last time." And it's like, "I don't know this guy from Adam. I've never seen him before today. Why would I care?" It's not as if he's going to be, it just seems so strange. Bok is behaving in a way that made me convinced that he and the son were in on it together.
And we're going to maybe get a ransom from the crew, whatever that means, right, in this time, and then kill Picard or something like that, right? But, and it would make so much more sense if they were really going to get a ransom. Like, he's using this whole thing to get money to extort money out of this because he's a Ferengi. Like, I just don't, none of it makes sense to me, and it all takes me out of the story, and I hate it. Like, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm not the guy who normally hates Trek. Like, I'm usually willing to give it a lot of leeway.
You know, something I didn't understand is the way he hit on Deanna. Now he's got this.
What's to understand?
No, you're not listening. He's
a heterosexual male.
He hit on Deanna, but a little bit later, he's being followed by a really hot security officer and she's standing right where she's supposed to be. And he walks up to her and says, "Hi, what's your name?" I thought, "Oh, her too, huh? Lieutenant Rhodes." "No, your first name. Sandra." "Sandra. Why are you right here?" "Well, you're told to keep an eye on you." "Well, can't you keep an eye on me over there?" I'm shocked that he didn't say Sandra. Would you still be keeping an eye on me if you were sitting on my lap? I was expecting that. Or come
that would
sit
have been
here.
Too much consistency for the episode.
Yeah.
They can't possibly give you that level of consistency of character for
this
particular episode.
The look on her face when he asked for her first name and Sandra. "Well, Sandra, could you get the hell away from me?" And she storms off. I thought, why did he have to be rude to her just after he got shot down by another woman? This one was ready to go. He could have been.
But he's already been to the holodeck, right? He's fully satisfied for the day.
Whoever had to clean that up. No, it just reminds me of, I'm trying to think of his name. Yeah, the guy who comes aboard and shags about 42 women in the time
Akona.
He's there.
Yeah,
Akona. I thought I saw a little bit glimmer of him in this kid. Like he was just going to hit on them all because, there's not too many women down in the caves where he's from. But that just confused me.
Actually, that's the thing, right? He's on a planet with how can I phrase this correctly? There weren't many humans that would have satisfied his any urges, right?
Right.
So I think that they didn't have like three females, of which a few were infants.
Yeah, there was an infant, an old person,
an old lady.
I mean, can you imagine that? They're intruding in people's bedrooms and in babies' cribs to determine what they are. But we already discussed that. Okay, so, like you said, you already discussed how he keeps coming aboard saying, "I'm going to kill him. You better pay me. I'm going to kill him." It all's working just fine until Jason has a seizure. Forrester Trent syndrome, very rare. It's hereditary. And since it doesn't run in daddy's line must be in mommy's.
And then they do the thing about, well, I don't remember my mom having any shakes. Well, that settled it then. You're not Picard's son.
Yeah,
it's like, what?
Eject him. Beam him over to the Daemon's, over to box ship. Who cares? But don't they climb together on the holodeck?
Actually, I have to say, okay, I'm look. Okay, first of all, disclosure here. I did have a dad. I'm aware of that. I grew up with my dad, so this isn't going to happen. But if I happen to find out that there's like a new dad, right? And I'm in like in my mid 20s, and then the dad in question is in his like 60s or so, and then I happen to be like really into rock climbing, and he says, "Well, I like rock climbing too." My first thought is going to be, "Nah, not really, not really." Right, there's a bit of a difference here between your ability to rock climb and my rock climbing. So let's not even pretend. It's as if, like, I'm a professional musician. Oh yeah, I own a flute. Let's rock out. Look, we're on different levels.
Yeah. Holodeck sports are really sports. Although I don't know why O'Brien keeps jacking up his shoulder with that kayaking program. I mean, isn't it supposed to prevent you from getting hurt? Or I guess certain hurt levels of hurt you can get. But after that, no.
Well, I was getting the impression that O'Brien's the kind of guy that can pull out his shoulder by getting out of the bed the wrong way. So I think it's more about an O'Brien thing rather than a holodeck thing.
Yeah, it is. I think he breaks it intentionally so it doesn't have to like snuggle up with Keiko or anything.
Hang on. Okay, we better get to DS9 soon because there are some good Keiko episodes in season one.
One good episode of Keiko in season one. The Paw Wraith episode.
There's only one good episode of DS9 in the first season, and it involves board games.
Oh my god! Okay, for a second I'm thinking, it's a little harsh, but I will accept that Duet is the standout episode, and you come up with board games.
Did you say board games as in Caliber Rain, Count to Four?
Caliber Rain, yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, I'm surprised those actors didn't go on strike saying, I'm not doing this. But, yeah, no, they did it. And Caliber Rain, no vaccine, no Lieutenant Yar. Why did they not run past another editor and say, guys, this sucks?
What they should do, really, is they should make, you know, they obviously made, actually, technically they didn't make 26 episodes for the first season. I think it's only 22 for the first season of DS9. But they should have made, like, a couple of spares and then just all agreed which ones can be jettisoned for being, you know, for being the Code of Honor or the, you know, Naked Nows of, I think Naked Now was fine. But, you know, the bad episodes of the first season. They should have produced like 40 episodes and just held 20 of them back.
Yeah.
They could call it the Code of Honor rule, and then they put those episodes out like on the DVDs as extras.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah.
If you really want to pain yourself, watch these episodes that we wouldn't even air.
Mm-hmm. Angel One. Anyway.
I think I was watching a review of Angel One the other day. I can't remember even why it came up. I think it came up my YouTube feed for no reason. But the Angel One is the one with the women running the show, right?
Hot women running the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Barely dressed hot women running the show. I was just looking at Angel One, our scores for that, and I was thinking, why didn't I bump that up at least one because of all the scantily clad women running around?
Was I on that one? I feel like I was on that one.
No. No, we have nobody on there for that.
It was because of the scantily clad Riker. It was one up, one down.
Yes, one up, one down. Yeah, no, you could be. No, Riker, no. We both gave it a one, so it was well deserved. Yeah.
Okay, today's gone long.
No, more than usual, really. I'm trying to find. Oh, Chris, I've got you on. Episode 15, Season 3, Yesterday's Enterprise. Nope. Deja Q. You were on with Ben. That is the first time I have you on.
Man, I miss Ben. I email him occasionally, but he stopped emailing me back at this point.
That's sad.
Love that guy. Hope he's doing well. Ben, if you hear this, still think about you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well. There we go. So, I remember we were talking about the seizure, and that's how she isn't that how she finds out that, sorry to say, but you're not his daddy after all.
We don't find out about this until he's actually on the Ferengi vessel. It's kept as a mystery, which I imagine most people could see through.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, one thing I also liked while they were climbing their rock and decided to take a break, and Jason does tell the, you know, about his mother, what she was like, and she just sounds like a nice lady. And again, I'm just more shocked that Picard wasn't a little more emotional, like, yeah, I remember she was nice or something, but he just, yeah. She was attacked and murdered for the food she was carrying. And that still doesn't Picard going, okay, I'm sorry to hear all that. And him and his father were estranged. So.
There's the repositioning of Picard's father, right, through Picard season 2 is unnecessary, and the repositioning of Picard's mother in season 2 is also unnecessary. And it kind of contradicts this one, right? Like, we know who Picard's father is. We do get snippets here and there. And it's not what is portrayed in season 2 of Picard.
No. That's the problem with going back and redoing things that you've already talked about. It doesn't make any sense. Even the house that they were in for Picard didn't make any sense to me.
No.
Anyway, okay.
Actually, can I say this? I'm going to tell you. Picard's mum, so the actress that plays Picard's mum, I was watching Picard season 2 and I was seeing the actress, and she's kind of not a big actress in any way, shape or form, but I knew that I had seen her somewhere recently and I could not get it out of my mind, and I was going absolutely crazy as to where I've seen this person before. And she's trying to do a bit of an English accent in the in Picard season 2. And it then hit me. And if anyone wants to know what I was watching at the same time as I was watching Picard season 2, I was watching the latest season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, where she is Larry's love interest's daughter. And it kind of hit me out of nowhere when I saw that, because in that series she doesn't play a big role, but she plays someone who's completely indignant of how Larry David is behaving, and kind of considers him a bit of a freak. And it tickled me something chronic when I realized that it was the same actress that played this character as played Picard's mum. Anyway, that's just as an aside. I'm pretty sure that I possibly am the only overlap between those two shows. I don't know.
Okay. So anyway, we get another probe, and this time it's the revenge time. Picard is able to actually. So it was a probe that says, "I've got your boy, and I'm going to kill him unless I get my money." But then Picard is able to beam aboard his ship and inform his crew there's no profit in this, and they all turn against him.
I like how they literally write the line for Geordi. It's like, "Oh, but we won't be able to get you back." And Picard basically says, "Don't worry, we haven't thought this far ahead yet in the script." And it's like, okay, you're even acknowledging it yourselves. There's no intention of having the ability for Picard to come back, other than that we know we've only got 3 minutes left of the show and it's going to get solved.
Okay. Yeah, let's go ahead and solve it. So Bach is taken into custody because there's no profit in this for them. Jason gets returned
to K-Mor 5 in the original position he was in, like ready to climb a mountain. And I guess that pretty much is it. Yay?
Yep.
Okay. So then it's time to torture you for a few more minutes with our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being completely unreasonable if you are a Star Trek fan. Chris, you get to go first.
Oh, of course. This episode is 5 stars. Like, I don't know what else you would give it.
Yeah, I remember James gave a ridiculous one like 19 stars once.
No, this is definitely it's rare, you know, but if the one star is that episode that shall not be named from the first season that Lou already named in this episode, if that's a one, you know, like the absolute dirt worst, it's also offensive. This is not offensive, but it's not good in any way. So I would give it a 2.
Okay. Give it a 2. Shades of Grey. So a 2 is good for me. For me, it's just lame. It's another tragic misuse of the Ferengi. There are much better Ferengi episodes in in DS9. And James, I got a feeling you and I are probably not going to give the same rating to the Magnificent Ferengi. Hey? But I don't know if I don't think you will.
Okay. What? Are you on the high side or on the low side?
That doesn't matter. We'll figure that out later.
It's an awesome episode.
Oh, then maybe we are in the same shuttlecraft at the time. Okay. Let's see here. What's worse about this episode is it actually spawns off a part 2 in the movie. Only they just tweak it a little bit. And, which is pretty much that one. That movie led to the death of the TNG era movies. So it may have ended to the death of Star Trek movies altogether. But thanks to JJ, he was able to keep it alive and then totally screw it up. But this is one more attempt to be scary, and it's just plain and simple lame. Not very interested. But like you said, I can't give this a 1-star rating because this isn't Masks. Man of the People. The Perfect Mate, Imaginary Friend. Should I go on? No, I won't. So yeah, this is a very, very low 2 for me as well. So, Doc?
Okay, actually, so, I mean, in all honesty, I was coming in thinking that this was a 2 out of 5 episode. And as we have kind of chatted, I was getting the impression that people were going to be coming in at a 1, and they would have been kind of surprised that I was going to come in at a 2. And the reason why it's a 2 is that it's boring. There's not a huge amount of, you know, positive. But actually, there's not a huge amount of pain in this episode, right? There isn't the kind of thing that just absolutely kind of hits you and is boring. And it's, you know, they do a good enough attempt at keeping it going, and yes, it's predictable and it's a little bit, it's nonsense and you don't care about it and all of that stuff, but I don't know, it's not one of like the real painful episodes from season 1 and season 2. So I was always going to be coming in at a 2 for this guy. You know, I think overall I've mentioned what I thought about it. I think it's, they should have just kept him as Picard's son at the end. You know, looking back now, and you obviously don't want to write yourself into a corner, but was there really any character development for Picard going forward that meant that this guy couldn't have been his son, right? Did they need to protect the character at this stage in the season for potential future storylines to come. I don't see it. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a boring episode. I don't know. We're getting towards the end, right? I imagine that people that are actually writing Trek at the moment are either writing for DS9 or for Voyager, or at least getting that stuff prepared. So, very underwhelming.
Okay. All right, 2-2-2. We all saw the same episode. So, all right, Chris, thank you for coming on, and hopefully we will have you on for the next one, Emergence. I'm having trouble remembering that one, too.
Enterprise. Well, it was a pleasure.
Oh, that's right. The Enterprise comes alive, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Tell me some of these stinkers in the last season wasn't the reason why they canceled it. Anyway. And hopefully we'll have you on with Wayne, who I have talked to recently, and he is looking forward to doing it, so I hope he's available. But we'll work it out. So everyone, join us next time as we review episode number 23, and like I said, that's called Emergence. After that, we have one more regular episode, and then all good things must come to an end. So we will do that in... And then in about 8 to 10 years, we'll be doing What You Leave Behind.
At least you know yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, you know what would be really funny is if you were going to be off for some of those, if we could just like hit some of those things out while you're available. But anyway, take care, everyone.
Doc, take a week's vacation and we could just record all day.
No.
Make it our job.
No, I am not doing any of... And I will not do a series review without the Doctor. I'm just not interested whatsoever.
I didn't say that. No, I said the Doc takes a week vacation. Mm-hmm. And we just stay on all day long doing...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see it. Yeah, that'd work for me. Of course, you know, he's 6 hours ahead of us, so we'd have to, like... Well, see, it ain't possible because he's got too many little whippersnappers running around there that, you know, when they walk in and...
All night in my life.
Yeah, he's trying to record an episode at, say, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you hear the little cute little voice, Papa, Mama wants you to make a tea for her. God, my... I gotta say, my British accent sucks. But
got to work on it.
I do. James, you sound so much better as a Brit than I do. I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard him try to get out a Yankee voice.
Oh, Doc, can you do it?
I can't. No.
I can't. No. I'm not even gonna try.
Like, hey, man, you know, I mean, it's nothing wrong with our accents here. Come on, man. Shnuggy-wuggy. All right, everybody. Good night, guys.
Have a good
night. Okay, good night. Good night.
Bye-bye. All right.
Okay, Lou, I'm going to press the stop record button. So there's...
I'm going to, too, actually. No,